Hello, welcome to The Thing About Cars. We've got a full house around the table today. Dawn, are you with us?
I'm here.
Dave.
I am here as well.
Ben.
Oh, yes.
And our special guest for the day, the one, the only, the man who does the thing, Robert Drake. Robert, how are you?
I'm fabulous. How are you? I don't actually talk that way, except in certain circumstances to certain people who we will not mention.
And I'm your host, Mickey. Before we get into Grand Trivia Auto, I have something that I've been meaning to put out on the table. And this doesn't have any real structure or any place in our normal structure, but it should only take a couple minutes. I posted this picture on our Facebook page of this shady looking character. Did we talk about this already on tape? We haven't done this, have we?
I don't think so, no.
Yeah, this shady looking guy, unidentifiable guy, wearing probably a balaclava and a hoodie and carrying this notebook sized device with an antenna sticking out of it. And the question was, what's that guy doing? Because the person who originally posted that picture says, my security camera picked this up. And it really is sort of a spooky, intimidating looking picture. And so the question is, what's this guy doing? And I think a couple of good possibilities came out of that discussion when I originally saw this picture, one of which is directly relevant to cars. So I was wondering if you guys remember that picture and if you could take a guess on what that guy was doing.
I remember the picture. I'm pulling it back up because I want to look at it again because I didn't pay that much attention to the device.
Right. It did. It's basically a metal box with an antenna and some lights on it.
You did sufficiently freak me out when you posted it because it was late at night, and so I turned my security cameras on.
It's a tricorder, and he's looking for signs of life.
Don, have you seen it? Do you remember that?
I know, and I'm trying to pull Facebook up, and it's just do.
Well, one of the possibilities, which I think is a completely valid possibility, has nothing to do with cars, and someone suggested that he was just searching for unsecured Wi-Fi channels. But the thing that really scared me for a second was the possibility that this guy was searching for keyless fobs, right? Key fobs, so that he was basically scanning people's doorways for where people may simply have discarded their keyless entry fobs and getting codes so that he could then turn around at some point and steal their cars with those codes. So if that's possible, then what would you do to prevent this from happening? How do you safeguard yourself from the idea that someone could basically just walk up to your front door with a scanner and electronically glean whatever that person needs to be able to unlock your car with essentially a laptop and drive it away?
Well, the real quick and easy answer is you make that key fob undetectable or unreadable. Two ways you can do that. One, just have it outside of the range of, either the fob or his device's, transmit and receive capabilities, or you put it in a container that will block the signal.
Yeah, a Faraday cage, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, a simple metal can should do the trick. If it's, grounded to your house's electrical ground, that would probably help.
Really? A Faraday cage needs to be grounded?
Generally, yeah. because if it's electrically connected to nothing, then electrically it is nothing, essentially.
Well, and the way to make a Faraday cage is pretty simple. I mean, you could get some screen door, like some copper screen or some aluminum screen, and line the inside of a box or a can with that. I didn't think about the grounding part, though. That makes some sense.
Actually, now that you're talking about this, I am on Popular Mechanics, and they are showing guys doing exactly what we're discussing about, is using a scanning device that looks just like that to capture a key fob to unlock and steal a car.
Yeah, or you could just let your battery die, and he's not going anywhere anymore.
Yeah.
Which is what I do right now, all the time.
Well, there used to be some people, when car theft was really bad in the 70s and 80s, had a transmission lock, and you had to have a key to unlock the transmission.
Which sort of defeats the purpose of keyless entry, though. And most people these days, I think, are not gonna want to give up that convenience. Although I'm with you, I kind of like the idea of disabling the car before anyone can take it.
Well, all the things people have attempted over the years, even before the keyless era. I remember in a 1980s episode of 60 Minutes, they had a Camaro that had a car alarm and a club locked on the steering wheel. and I forget what else. And the pros who attacked the thing were still able to steal it in about 30 seconds. Yeah. Less than that, actually, I think. They busted the door open. Yeah, the alarm went off, but it was two guys. As soon as one got the door open, he pulled the bonnet release. The other one yanked off the battery cable. That quieted down the alarm. Then they disabled the alarm before they reconnected it. Meanwhile, the other guy is taking a hacksaw to the club. He's through that in about 10 seconds.
In fact, what that if I saw the same episode, what that guy did was actually saw through the steering wheel to remove the club because there's just one cut in the steering wheel.
Well, you can do either way, really.
Right. In any case, so make a Faraday cage, put your keys, you know, if you have the whole keyless thing, stick them in a metal box or build your, you know, any. Would you say that making an RFID compliant box would do the same thing?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now there's also, you can buy Faraday bags for key fobs for about $15.
That's not bad. All right.
Or just have really old cars that nobody wants to buy or wants to steal.
That's my strategy.
I mean, they can have the rust bucket van outside in the back. Take it, please.
Everyone's got the right idea.
I'll get more money from insurance. Take it.
And the number one deterrent to theft is just making it inconvenient.
Yeah.
Because in most cases, thieves are going for the low hanging fruit, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
If they've got to work even a little bit more, they're going to pass on.
Good luck trying to get into my garage. It's pretty precarious.
Yeah. No. All right. Our grand trivia auto question for the day. You guys ready?
Go for it.
Yeah.
We may skip over this one if you think it's too easy. The Chevrolet is named after the company's co-founder, Louis Chevrolet. In what country was Louis born? Is this too easy for you guys?
I don't know.
The choices are, was Louis Chevrolet born in Germany, Switzerland, Austria, or France?
It's got to be one of those.
It's got to be one of those.
Chevrolet is a pretty Germanic, romantic type of derivative name. So yeah. We'll have to.
Right.
I think it's a little stumper, maybe.
Yeah.
All right. We'll come back to that at the end of the show. Right now, Dawn on the Autobahn. Dawn, take us away.
Oh, my goodness. Do I have some quirkiness, weirdness, car experiences lately?
Yeah.
So my wonderful 320 CLK Mercedes convertible got the window fixed. So the back, you know, the back jump seats where there's that little window, and it was actually the motor was busted, the window was busted, and $1,000 later, the window works. But now, the seatbelt doesn't work. Because I think that someone who was repairing it probably messed up the weights or something, so my seatbelt will come out and just hang there. So now I have a seatbelt repair thing, which means I'm probably going back to the guy that fixed it to say, you messed up my seatbelt. Now you got to fix that. On top of that, my sixth CD changer in my wonderful little CLK makes a clicking noise every time we start the car, but it doesn't, there's no changer in there. I took that out eons ago. This is a 2004, and who uses CDs anymore? So I just took it out, and good for you, Robert. But no, I took it out, and now it's making this funny clicking noise, and I've got to figure out how to disable that part of it. On top of that, the battery died before this. Before I got the window fixed, and now I'm into that weird time frame where I have a seatbelt that doesn't work, and I have to put 100 miles on this car to get the emissions test because my birthday's next month. So I just, you know, the quirkiness of this 100 miles is all, it's happened before. You know, during the winter, I don't drive the convertible as much. I go, the battery's dead. Jump the battery. Go take it for emissions, and they say, even a 2004, you don't have enough mileage to record any emissions issues. None of the O2, none of that stuff is out there able to actually test. So I just want to warn everybody that as you get into these older vehicles, one thing leads to another thing that leads to another thing. And you better love your car. Like, I cannot envision her sitting in a junkyard anywhere. So I just keep fixing her, and I'm excited. Yeah, go ahead, Dave.
I'm not sure she has the same feelings towards you.
She definitely does.
That's cold, man. That is
she
just cold.
She definitely does. Let me tell you, that car was born on my birthday. It rolled off the lot on my birthday in 2004. We were meant to be together, and I bought her 3 years later from a friend on my birthday in 2007. So that is my baby.
In she that case, have you considered exorcism?
So, or the fact that the car is actually an old Jewish woman. Oi, you think your back? Imagine my shoulder. You cannot believe what I'm hearing. Oh my God. Get the whole thing done.
That's entirely possible. Sitting in the garage going, you never call, you never write, you never drive me.
Right. Exactly.
You ignore me for 6 months. I put on makeup in case you should start.
I move my little windshield wipers and you do nothing. I blink at you, you do nothing. The best part of this Audubon story, you know, I should be getting her out there more often, not just on Sundays. But when we lived in Europe, my parents bought this CL. It was a hard top coupe. And it was a 1969, and we bought it in the 80s. And it sat in this woman's garage in Germany, and she only drove it to church on Sundays. I drove that car for about a year or two when I first got out of college, and it was a tank. That car was solid. It was like, felt like it was iron. And that's why we ended up getting rid of her, was because she started rusting. And literally you put your foot down and went right through the floor. My goal with this car is to get to 25.
That's only supposed to happen with a VW van.
So yeah, for those of you, as we're starting the new year, you've got to get your emissions done and you haven't been driving your vehicle. Moral of the story is you've got to get out and drive that car because you're going to, and they will give you a grace period. You know, they'll say, it didn't pass emissions. You got to come back. But that means now you got to really get out there and drive that car.
You get a month.
Yeah, you do. You only get 1 month. Exactly. And then you just keep taking it back. And sometimes even that 100 miles doesn't, there's three things, Ben, I think you have to look for, right? Like when you test it.
I'm a little sketchy on the whole list, but they're going to plug an OBD into it. They're going to connect to the fuel cap. Yeah, and that's basically about it. And the OBD is just basically running through all the sensors that are relevant to the system.
And for some reason, sometimes 100 miles, I was reading on a Camry, it doesn't trip one or two of the sensors. You have to hit it for longer. Mine has worked after 100 miles. It seems to always hit all the sensors and everything's fine. So anyway, that's my Audubon experience with my wonderful CLK. And she's pretty as all, just sitting in the garage waiting for me to crank her up today and take her around the lake.
There you go. Yeah.
So
without a seatbelt
or a
CD to listen to.
It does play. It has an old radio in it. It will play regular tunes. So if I stick it on a 94.1 or whatever, I'll get some nice music out of it. No Sirius, no syncing with my iPhone. None of that. This is classic radio.
Are you going to do the Crutchfield thing, Dawn, and order another head unit for it that does all the technological stuff?
You know, I keep debating. Ben and I had a conversation about that, and they have the ones that look old fashioned, kind of, you know, you can and have all the Bluetooth and high tech. I don't know. I debate back and forth. I kind of like unplugging when I get in my convertible, put the top down, leave the seatbelt in the back. Which is not, no, I don't.
Yeah.
It looks like it works, but it doesn't work. You know, it's nice not to have to worry about syncing things in Bluetooth. I mean, when I get in my car, I don't want all that stuff. So I'm actually leaning against it now. It's just my joyride car. It's not a car where I don't have to talk to anybody or.
And there is one other simple option too. There are some little devices you can get. They plug in line with the radio antenna lead. Mm-hmm. And they basically allow you an auxiliary input to come in through some particular radio frequency. So
I have that. It's terrible. I did buy one of those.
Yeah, they're terrible.
And it's the static for some reason with my speakers. It's awful.
You've got the wireless one, don't you?
Yeah, I got the wireless one.
That's the problem. The good ones are the ones that you go inside the dashboard, you take your antenna lead out of the back of the radio, plug it into this box, then plug it back into the radio.
Gotcha.
And that gives you the solid connection, no interference. And so then whatever you plug into it, just turn that on, throw it in the little console box and forget about it and just listen.
Yeah.
Well, Dawn, if you want to let me try to do some surgery to your CD changer, I'm happy to give it a shot as long as you don't really want it back.
Yeah, I mean, they're a dime a dozen. You know, I'm all about recycling. which is why I took, that's actually why I took out the changer. It's the box with the stack of CDs, because it was making a funny noise and it wouldn't, the CD would get stuck. And so I just thought, I don't need this anymore. I'm just taking it out. Right. And now it's been out for a good 5 years. And all of a sudden, the mechanics of it is making this click, click, click.
As I said, when we discussed it earlier, be glad that that's what happened instead of, some kid's Nickelback CD getting stuck in your player.
Yes, or Waylon Jennings over and over and over. I'd be fine with, nine inch nails. Yeah, I'd be fine with sticks. But yeah, some of these other ones, no thank you. That's reveals my age. But anyway, that's the experience that I'm having. I'm going to keep it forever. I mean, you're going to hear more stories in the future, I'm sure.
How many miles are on it?
Has probably about 80. She's low. I mean, for 2004, I use it as a business car when I first got it for about 3 years. And then we got a different vehicle and we started using that for long trips. And I mean, she's just sort of become my Sunday drive, around and have the top down and blare my tunes.
Yeah.
Well, I've repaired those decks before, so if I can have a shot at it. And like I said, if you're not really keen on getting it back, I'm not going to warranty the work, of course.
No.
There was a time I had a Mustang with a tape deck. That gives you the vintage of the Mustang, and something happened with the spring. A friend repaired it like you're offering, Mickey, and whenever you would eject the tape, it would fire it all the way back into the hatchback. I did discover this one time because one of my roommates from college was in the back seat and being a real ass, and I ejected the tape and put it right into his left eye.
Well, actually, that's,
well done.
That's the kind of cool thing about this particular stereo. There is actually a tape in there, and you have no idea because it's behind all of the visual numbers, and you can, touch on it and it comes out and you stick your little tape in it. So I'm very connected to it. I don't want to get rid of it. It's cute as a button. So, yeah.
All right.
It's fun.
It's fun. Well, I hope you can get it all fixed to your liking at some point.
Me too.
I hope the seatbelt thing becomes a non-issue. I hope they're like, oh yeah, we just forgot to do this.
I hope so too. Yeah.
Robert.
Sir.
How are you, man?
I'm well. Well, indeed.
Got to thank you for being our guest today. Started with you writing in a couple of I think, pretty important questions, which we tried to address in a prior episode. But now I realize that there's something of a twist to one of the questions or a clarifying point that you wanted to bring up?
So, yes, I wrote in because I helped someone jumpstart their car. And there were two items on their battery. For the life of us, we could not find left and right. It was not labeled. And literally, and there wasn't a red stick and a black stick. They were both black sticks. And the other thing was they fought me like heck on putting their negative onto the engine block rather than onto the negative terminal of the battery. And the result was they put it backwards on their battery, which was a terrible result.
What did happen, by the way?
It sparked like a banshee and we took it off. And then the person went, well, if you can find some place to put it to ground, and we reversed it and they started up and drove away. But
the reason I ask what happened is that because crossing polarity that way is a good way to short out like everything and blow all your fuses and fry your sound system and generally make the car undrivable as a result.
Well, this person lucked out and that didn't happen. But the mystery of why you wouldn't just have something that says this is the positive terminal, this is the negative terminal, that you could see in the dark, because Murphy's law says you know your battery's going to fail when you're trying to get your date back to your place for the first time, it's raining in the middle of the night and you're both a little drunk. So Now, that wasn't the case this time, and driving, I didn't go home with
and
it.
And you're driving?
The thing about cars does not endorse drinking and driving.
Absolutely not. Right. Not ever.
Right. Right. Nevertheless.
Robert, you'll be hearing from our attorneys, screech, screech, break, and bang.
I've warned off Dewey, Cheatham, and Howe, so. So it remains a mystery to me why you would make it difficult. And the only reason I can think to do it is then you have to hire somebody and somebody's making some money. The other thing that astonishes me is how small the batteries are in some vehicles these days. They're tiny. Some of the batteries I've seen are as small as, you know, a six pack.
Oh, smaller.
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, battery technology is advancing. Matter of fact, I was reading this morning about, I was wondering with all the EVs that we've been, you know they're coming online, how much of the source materials, I mean, lithium and cobalt are not limitless like oxygen. So, you know, and we're going to have a cobalt issue soon, but things are getting smaller in the ratio. For the nickel and the lithium and the cobalt is also changing. It's getting the batteries are getting smaller and smaller.
It's not just the batteries that are improving. It's that the amount of load that they have to put up with is decreasing because, you know, modern engines with their tight tolerances are easier to turn and the starters aren't as big as they used to be. Anyway, not to go on too much of a tangent.
So in any event, the question is, why make it difficult? And I think the thing for listeners to know is do yourself a favor, spend $5 on Sharpies and get Sharpies that you can read on your battery and write plus and minus.
Well, the thing is, every battery I've ever had, even if it wasn't color-coded, at least had a little raised embossed thing that had a plus or a minus on it.
Not this one.
Robert, what was the brand of the car?
It was a Chevrolet.
That surprises me.
What was the brand of the battery, though?
Yeah, I don't remember off the top of my head.
Yeah, because that would be highly suspicious if it was still the original one.
My guess it was a knockoff battery from knockoff aftermarket battery from Battery Mart Plus.
Well, then that raises an interesting question, which is when you have to replace your battery, should you go and buy the battery at an auto parts store and then do it yourself? Or do you want to, or whomever is changing your battery, do you want to say, I need these things in my battery? I need something that's at least, you know, 13 and a half volts at 50 amps or whatever and has all of that labeling.
It's nice if you know the stats and the specs, but I've never had an issue going into an auto parts store saying I drive an X, Y, and Z, and they'll be like, okay, here's your choices for batteries, and I'll just pick the one with the best warranty.
Yeah, I've always said the same. Matter of fact, I keep changing out this battery in my convertible because it keeps dying. And so we just go to AutoZone and say it's dead again and it's still under warranty, and then we spend an hour and a half trying to get the bleep thing out and back in because of the tie downs. So, yeah.
You know, I'm actually, this is a sidebar to this conversation, but I think it's appropriate. I want to introduce a new segment to the show. Guess what passive aggressive tactic Don's car will pull next?
Yeah. It really likes to hold on to that battery. Let me tell you what, it is hard to get that thing out of there.
And this is a topic for another show, I think, but if you've got parasitic drain happening, then there's a way to diagnose that as well.
That's the name of my new metal band.
Parasitic Drain. That's right.
Yes. You know, it must be because it literally, if I go to even a brand new battery, if I go 2 weeks without starting the car, that battery is dead. It is dead as a doornail.
Yeah,
I don't jump, but it, you know, in about 6-7 months, the battery is gone. So I have a parasitic, bizarre. What did you say?
A parasitic drain.
Parasitic drain.
Yeah,
that or a possibly also a weak charging system.
That is true. The alternator
going.
Yeah. But why would it kill the battery? That's the question.
Because it's not recharging by the time you park it again.
Okay.
You drive the car around. The alternator is supposed to do its job and recharge the battery. And for some reason, yours isn't. So obviously the way to check that out is to get, in fact, most auto parts stores will do this for you. They'll check the status and the health of both your battery and your alternator to tell you if your alternator is cranking out the amps that are required to recharge the battery.
You know, I know we've always checked the battery, but I don't know. I mean, come on, it's a 2004. The alternator is probably ready to be replaced if I can find the part.
Could be.
You know?
Could be.
Yeah.
It could be.
I'm stuck on parasitic drain.
I've just Googled it. There are so many websites about parasitic drain. I may not be able to participate in the rest of the show.
You should get an ammeter or a multimeter, Dawn. And there's this cool video that I'll share offline on the procedure. It's a time consuming process to figure out exactly what circuit in your car is causing the drain. Mm-hmm. And but it is doable. So in any case, Robert, I hope that tackles the battery.
That was the first one. Yes.
First one. Okay. What's the second one?
So the second thing I've noticed, and I'm sure I'm not alone in this, is that across Metro Atlanta, we've seen a horrific increase in super speeders and terrible driving. And what I have noticed is almost every single one of them is a Dodge Charger. All of them are Dodge Chargers. And if it's not that, it's a Camaro. And I actually did look this up, that in terms of causing traffic fatalities, Dodge Chargers are among the top 10 vehicles in the country. And that's from, you know, the National Transportation Safety Board. And what I want to know is, what about a Dodge Charger makes some idiot think that they're immune to traffic laws? You know, you don't see a Mercedes 560 doing this. You don't see a Ford Mustang doing this. You don't see a Toyota Celica doing this, if they even make a Toyota Celica anymore.
What are the other top 10 on the list, Robert? Do you remember?
I don't off the top of my head. But they also weren't by the number of models. And I wanted to ask you whether you have also seen the ridiculous explosion of Reckless Chargers, again, another great band name, and why Dodge Chargers? Why not a Corvette?
You know, for those of you who aren't in Atlanta, we should mention that because of the pandemic, the city has seen a huge influx of street racing and drag racing, especially late at night, and especially, oddly enough, on urban city streets.
The highways, yes, the main highway which goes through Atlanta is two highways at the same time, Interstates 75 and 85, and at one point it's 11 lanes across on each side.
Right. You know, actually, Robert, you're right. The few times I've been up to Buckhead, because I live on the south side and past the airport, and it's really interesting because one of the reasons I like the Dodge is I like their full backlights. I like the, you know, it's an inverted smile. Chris calls it a mustache, my husband. We love Dodges, and we've had Dodge Durangos. I think we had a Charger one time. I don't know, but I have seen the same thing, but I've also seen a lot of Honda Civics like racing each other. No, I've only seen one set of Ferraris race each other, and I've never seen a Mercedes, a Beamer, or any of the Toyotas. Except for that.
Well, I think there's an answer here, Robert. There's two factors that play into this. First off, APD stats have shown that Atlanta Police Department stats have shown that most of the people who are coming, who are getting arrested for reckless street driving in Atlanta are actually not from Atlanta. And I saw a police report in December that many of them are driving 4, 5, 6 hours to get to Atlanta, to lack of a better term, join the party. The other thing, though, according to goodcarbadcar.net, the Dodge Charger outsells other cars in its category by a super large margin. It's a price point issue. And, you know, basically, it's been outselling all of the other cars in its competitive set for 3 years now.
Yeah.
And would you think that those are Camaros and Mustangs?
Yeah, and if you wanted a real, powerful, sports sedan type thing, it's far and away more affordable than anything else in the class. There are a lot of guys, even though the same powertrains are available in both cars, some people opt toward the four-door Charger and some opt toward the two-door Challenger. But the Charger has much more of a kind of a big, bad, Darth Vader image than almost anything out there.
And I think the Charger serves as a dual. It can be a race car at night and it can take the kids to school in the morning because it's a big car.
It's a big car.
Oh, yeah.
That's the thing, though. It's an issue of availability and cost. I mean, the same reason people buy the rice burners and soup them up, right? The Hoonigans and who else, Ben? There's another group.
The Rice Boys.
I'm a little out of the loop on these days, but you don't buy
I am too.
Yeah, you don't buy an $80,000 car in order to customize it. You buy a $30,000 car in order to customize it, or even cheaper, right? And so when you get a Charger, it's much easier to tinker with because it probably didn't cost you a whole lot to begin with. Same reason the Civic is so popular for the same purpose.
Yeah, I think one other thing that probably plays into some of the popularity with the Chargers is it's got a super good safety record because it's got a safety frame that's built with high strength steel, advanced multi airbags, a whole bunch of safety features. It could also be that the drivers who are buying them are feeling a little invincible
and cooped up. Exactly. Actually, Robert, that's what I was thinking is I'm not commuting during the day. So the only time I'm going up through Atlanta is at night to go to a very, very private function. And that's when they're all coming out. I mean, and as far as bad drivers, I have actually noticed lately a huge disregard for lane changes. And, granted, people that should use their turn signals don't use them, but really misjudging the distance in a lane change lately. We were nearly broadsided with this huge SUV that came over and kept coming over. We were in the HOV lane and cut us off and missed our bumper by like centimeters. So I think people are just really ignoring physics.
Well, I think people are a little stir crazy. I think that people are these days are also more on edge for a number of different reasons. That might also have something to do with
it. And when you're cooped up, driving is a skill like anything else. Your skills get rusty if you're not using them every day.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, I don't think the safety angle probably appeals that much to the street racing crowd. However, the fact that cops drive a lot of Chargers too.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people probably like the fact that a lot of the general public will just see will just generally recognize one. And before they've even figured out if it's a cop or not, we'll get out of its way because it might be.
This is why I'm going to get a Charger.
It's possible, but the number, if you're on the connector or if you're on Georgia 400, the number of vehicles going more than 100 miles an hour. I know we're in Atlanta. For those of you not in Atlanta, the number of the road is generally considered to be the speed limit of that road. So if you're on 75, you go 75. If you're on 85, you go 85. And there are a lot of people who are trying to make that 400 number. And in fact, there's one story of the police who were going to chase a car, but they clocked it doing 145 and they just said, nope, we'll wait 30 minutes and we'll clean up the wreck.
Yeah.
And the question is, why do people feel that, why do people not have enough self-restraint, and why aren't the police, if they're able to so easily identify what these vehicles are now, not simply saying, great, we're going to get videotape of this and we're going to go to your house and we're going to impound the car.
And car accidents were dropping up until 2019. I was looking at the Georgia highway traffic fatality stats, but they lag a year or so. And remember how you can go up and it would say how many people died in traffic, like every month it would flash that on the overheads. And we were hitting at least 100 to 150 people were dying a month. And then that number started to go down. But now they're saying it has actually gone up. I've seen more accidents in driving than I've ever seen, you know, when I was driving frequently.
Right. And there are lots of people who I'm sure are saying, I don't have to obey your laws. Well, yeah, friction, gravity, those laws you're going to have to obey.
Your freedom ends where you take mine away. Thank you very much.
And where you try and defy physics.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right. So I don't know. We need to move on. How do we wrap up this segment?
Mickey, you have questions for Robert.
I think that legalizing marijuana for recreational use of cannabis will help keep people home, and we should encourage it.
And even the ones who don't, again, not that we condone driving while intoxicated, but the ones who'd be foolish enough to do it would at least be a lot mellower.
Right. Yeah. All right. Very cool. Robert, you ready for your three questions?
Yes, sir. Hit them.
All right. Question number one, what is your dream car?
Believe it or not, a 1994 Honda Prelude.
A 94 Honda Prelude.
Now, can anyone guess why?
Is that the fourth gen or the fifth gen?
I don't know.
I think that's a four, but
it has four-wheel steering.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was an optional feature, as I recall.
Yeah.
And it's just such a neat little car, but could you imagine having a car with four-wheel steering? You could parallel park anywhere. There's no parallel parking you can't do. And right. Yes, when you're driving to someplace like Highlands, North Carolina, if you've never driven from Atlanta to Highlands, North Carolina, you're missing a real fun drive. And the ability to have the four wheels go with you, just, oh, how much fun would that be to have a five-speed? And
the four-wheel steering also appeared on the third-generation Prelude and some of the fourth. But yeah.
And as I recall, the way it worked was, you know, it wasn't a very large amount of steering. It was just a couple degrees or something. But it changed at different speeds. At low speeds, yeah, exactly. You know, they would turn the opposite way of the front wheel so that you get just a little bit tighter, you know, turn radius in the parking lot. If you had full rear wheel steering, that would confuse more people and their back ends would bash into things. But then as you increased in speed, it would become more and more neutral. And then by the time you got to interstate speed, they would turn the same way as the front wheels so that you didn't get as much on the roll axis, didn't give as much yaw axis when changing lanes.
Right. Yep. That's right.
I think that'd be super fun.
Question number two, what's your next road trip?
Our next road trip, hopefully, is going to be to try to sneak into Canada.
Sneak into Canada.
Ooh. Absolutely. I have relatives in Michigan. And if you're going to get all the way to Michigan, one of the great trivia questions of all time is, why is the song Don't Stop Believing fundamentally incorrect?
Why?
What happens if you're in downtown Detroit and you go due south?
You're in Canada.
You're in Windsor, Canada.
Yeah.
So, you know, the line is wrong. Yeah. Just a small town girl born and raised in Windsor, Canada. Because okay. South Detroit, no. If you go south from Detroit, you're in Canada. And it's one of the few places in the United States where you go south into Canada.
On behalf of our attorneys, the thing about cars also does not endorse violating international borders.
So what you're saying, Robert, is that there is no part of Detroit that is more southerly than any other part of Detroit.
Oh, you're all making right. me pull up my Google Maps. This is bad.
Question, while Don's doing the geography on that, question number three, what's the most fascinating thing you've seen in someone's house or garage?
The most fascinating thing I've seen in someone's house or garage would have to be a grandfather clock that opened and it was a door into another room.
This wasn't the Wayne Manor, was it?
No. I was not invited to those parties. I said something bad about inventing weaponry, and so I wasn't welcome. But I have a friend I have a friend who wrote a play in which the grandfather clock was a door, and they kept the prop and they made it a doorway when they built a house.
Very cool.
And so you can walk through the grandfather clock into another room. And that's pretty awesome, because when you come back, then the clock is still working.
When we were remodeling our house, I built, our den is lined with bookcases, and I tried to convince my partner to let me put one in front of the basement door that could only be opened by pulling a candle off of the shelf.
Absolutely.
All right. Question number four, Robert. You're now a superhero with an unlikely power. Is it the ability to shoot meatballs out of your nose, or the power to create force fields but only around insects?
Well, I like to feed people, so I'm going with the meatballs out of the nose, because imagine what you could do for Atlanta's homeless problem.
Dave is rethinking his life choices at this point.
On behalf of David, I would like everything about Cars listeners to understand that their lawyers wish you to say that you should not ingest a meatball that comes from someone else's orifice.
That's right.
But nevertheless, if I'm going to have a superpower, I'm going with that. I also look forward to my endorsement deal with IKEA. and you know, because I'm one of the few people who probably could make a meatball with just an Allen wrench. And so that should be a really useful skill to have. And just imagine, you would be the coolest guy at every single Cub Scout camp for miles.
I'm concerned about the speed at which they leave the nose.
Well, you might have a friend in the back seat who says something obnoxious, and you might turn around and go, ping. And now they have a meatball for an eye.
It's all fun and games until
somebody loses an eye, and then it's just fun.
Thank you, Robert. Thank you for being our guest today.
Absolutely.
Please stick around for the rest of the show.
We have to
move on for my segment here, which is called Grinds My Gears. You guys know what grinds my gears today?
What's that?
The idea is that cars are too damned expensive for people to continue to get into them.
You have nailed it. Actually, that is true. Go for it.
Yeah.
Grind away.
You know, it's like we're decrying a certain element of car culture, but the little bit of research I've been reading says that income inequality is what's actually killing the car market, specifically around sports cars and muscle cars, right? Like the idea of what we used to be able to afford back in the 90s is a very, very different thing of what we can afford now. And the majority of people simply aren't making enough to buy cool cars that are coming off the line.
I think my dad paid $2,400 for his 64 Corvette.
Good grief.
Brand new.
Which was not inexpensive in those days either.
No, it wasn't.
Right.
But you're right. And I think that one of the things that I hear a large number of durable goods manufacturers write about is that, well, price and elasticity doesn't matter in an environment where the cost of borrowing is so low. So when the interest rates were 6%, 7%, 8%, then a lower car price, was justified. But that's BS, because if you are fresh out of college, saddled with six figures of college debt, and that was traditionally who the sports car market was. That was who the Fiat Spiders and the Miatas and were targeted at. You don't have access to that amount.
Right. Well, and also we're taking the money away from what else are they going to invest in? It's like all the money goes toward living and nothing goes toward retirement or investing in a home and that's unfortunately, statistically, the majority of people that have an account, $50,000 is all they've got in their 401k at the age of 50.
So according to this thing I'm reading on Road and Track, this was written in November of 2020. It says, to figure out what's happening, we have to jump back in time. In 1990, the median wage for a young man aged 25 to 34 was $21,000 and change a year. The original Mazda Miata had just arrived around the same time with the base price of only $14,000. And the median house price in 1990 was just shy of $80,000.
Yep.
Right. So here's the new problem. In 2019, the median wage for the same young man, this is not a woman, this is a man, was $42,000 and change. A base 2019 Miata retailed for $26,500, proportionally stable at roughly 65% of the median annual wage. The real shocker is in housing. In the ensuing years, the median home price shot up to nearly $325,000, a full 7.6 times the median annual wage of our young earner. It says here that the situation is even worse for young women. In 1990, the median wage for women aged 25 to 34 was not even $13,000, and it only got to 35 and a half per year in 2019. So earnings have not kept pace with housing costs.
Actually, the conversion of the 21,000 from 90 to 2001 is $42,000. It's gone nowhere. That's the buying power of 21,000 back then is the same as 42,000 today.
So income inequality is the problem here.
Yeah, it's a tough one to really address without going down the rabbit hole of the past 50 years of U.S. economic policy. Right. So, but the sports car angle has a little bit of its own unique conundrum too, because things that people can afford have really dried up. You know, sports cars in the old days were really inexpensive because they were smaller, they were more basic. Yeah. You know, they were fairly straightforward little. And yeah, anything that's fun to drive now is super premium, even if it's not more car than something else, you know, like that little Toyota 86 / Subaru BRZ thing. It's very small. It's somewhat basic, but it's not that cheap. Cheap-ish as cars now go. But the person who that's targeted at, if they're starting their young family, they probably can't afford a second car. So they're going to have to skip it and get the little, you know, minivan or SUV or something.
Well, let me ask then, because there are two questions that I ponder as you guys are discussing this. One is the durability of cars, and the ability to get a fundamentally solid used car is much better than it was 30 years ago.
Yes, that's true.
And second, the influence of organizations like Lyft, Uber, and Zipcar, so that when the percentage of people who actually need a car in any given moment can address it in a variety of ways.
And Robert, let me go back to your first point about the affordability of used cars. You're absolutely right. However, so you buy a used car and you're paying a monthly, you've got a little mortgage on your car, and those used cars are out of warranty. So then you get into repairs. And that's what usually happens, is those folks that can afford the used car can't afford the upkeep on them.
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
They're out of warranty.
Yeah, this is what I really love about the show, because only on The Thing About Cars can you cover the spectrum from income inequality to nasal deployed meatball armature.
I'll be powering my car with that.
We're a well-read bunch, that's for sure.
And the interesting question to me is, what's going to happen in the transition away from gasoline-powered cars over the next 30 years?
We talked about that last episode, actually, a little bit. We haven't released that one yet, but we did discuss that. But Robert, you should come back for another episode and we can cover that again. I think it's definitely a topic that's going to surface time and time again over the next several months, as a matter of fact.
Yeah. So, I mean, Apple is trying to cut a deal with Kia down here in Atlanta, in LaGrange, which is just down 85 south of Atlanta. And I think they want to be more, you know, as high end sexy as the iPhone is, I think they want to have a more affordable EV out of that marriage. Or
Don, my devil's advocate sentence next to sentence is going to be, why then are they charging us $1,000 for a freaking phone?
Because you're willing to pay it.
That's the basis of marketing.
Yep. I mean, but I'm still using my six. I used to upgrade my phone every year. until it got over $500. And then I was like, it ain't happening anymore.
Yep,
I'm not dropping over 500. And, but of course, I'm of a certain age. Somebody else who may, whose parents may be buying them that $1,000 phone is a different story. I think that's the marketing piece that some of us just aren't attuned to. So, but I, you know, I read that about Apple. VW's coming out with an EV that, you know, VW, the Volkswagen, people's car, Volkswagen.
Right. Well, and just to wrap out the segment on grinding my gears, it seems like that we have a dual solution. Not only do we have to fix income inequality, but car manufacturers have to decide they're going to make things affordable for people. Is that what you would say, Ben?
Yeah, and they would probably disagree with this because they're selling what they're making.
Right.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's going to depend on, you know, we keep bailing out companies. I mean,
the thing about car politics.
Yeah. and we, you know, there are mergers happening. Cars, you know, we had that one episode where we talked about the limited number of styling that's coming out on the cars. And I'm still kind of wondering this, reading this morning, the pandemic may turn into, there's a new word out there, that endemic, where the, you know, we have the coronavirus, the COVID-19 forever. People have new ways of interacting. They're not going into an office every day. Maybe the car becomes more of a luxury item because maybe things become more mixed use, even out in suburban areas. I mean,
again, that goes back to, I think my second point is that you still have Zipcar and Lyft and Uber who, if you don't need a car every day, you, when you need a car, you can get one.
Yeah, although that's not as widespread across the land as it would seem. It's big in the cities, but you know, there are a ton of small towns out there that are still, you know, the economic engines of our country where stuff like that doesn't exist.
It's going to be interesting because we down in the on the south side of Atlanta in Henry County did not get Uber and Lyft until 2019. Like the end of 2019, it was hard to get. And even at that, the cost was so much higher going in suburban areas than it was in Atlanta because riders weren't getting, you know, that frequency. You could have an Uber driver sitting down the block for half an hour to 2 hours before they got a hit. But it, you know, again, I think this is fun and fascinating to talk about because we are in the middle of major tectonic change. I often feel like we are, the 21st century is almost like the conversion from the 19th to the 20th century. You know, we are just hitting on so many advances that keep coming at us, and some of us embrace them and some of us push them away.
Right. Well, evolution is rarely a peaceful process, right? It's usually quite an upheaval. So, all right, let's wrap up the episode, shall we? Our grand trivia auto question of the day is Chevrolet is named after the company's co-founder, Louis Chevrolet. In what country was Louis born? Was it France, Austria, Switzerland, or Germany? Robert, guest of honor, you go first.
So here's my reasoning. Chevrolet, it sounds like a French name, which is too obvious, but who also speaks French? The Swiss. And so I am going to say that Chevrolet, and if memory serves, he was a race car driver. I could be completely wrong. I'm going off memory. But I'm going to say that he was Swiss.
Okay, Robert's answer is Swiss. Ben, what do you think?
I'm going to go with France just to be different from the previous guest, but still obvious.
Still obvious. Dave?
Well, as I said, by Robert's logic, he could also be Belgian, but I believe he is Swiss.
Swiss.
Well, remember, all those countries change borders many, many, many times.
Many times.
You know, if you go to Strasbourg and half of them speak French and half of them speak German, I'm going with Austria.
You're going to go with Austria? Mm-hmm. So you guys, I can only say two things in French, and it's very sad the amount of French I speak. I can say oui, oui, and ha, ha, and that's it. That's all I can
do. Sacre bleu, omelette du fromage.
So Chevrolet is actually, he was born in Switzerland. He was the second child of Joseph Felicien Chevrolet, a watchmaker who lived in Canton of Neuchâtel. I can't pronounce it.
Neuchâtel,
a center of watchmaking in northern Switzerland in 1886. Chevrolet's family left Switzerland to live in Bonn.
Bern.
And is it B-E-R-N or B-O-O-N-E?
It's B-E-A-U-N-E.
No.
Yeah.
It's someplace in France. And there, as a young man, Lewis developed his mechanical skills and interest in bicycle raking and bicycle racing, and everything took off from there. So he was a Swiss native. So thanks, you guys. Thanks for playing Grand Trivia Auto.
This is our pleasure.
I assume, Mickey, that the prize is that you're going to bring me a Swiss miss.
No, Robert, I'm going to bring you a Napoleon.
Or a meatball.
A meatball that I'm going to shoot right out of my nose.
But it'll be a Swiss meatball.
Exactly.
From now on, I shall only be doing this show this way.
So to our listeners, thank you for joining us and putting up with our nerdiness today. We really appreciate you being a part of the Thing About Cars family, and we like it when you can leave us a rating on Apple Podcast or Google Podcast or wherever you listen to that to the show. Your ratings make us more visible, and we really appreciate that. In the meantime, we hope you and yours are staying warm and safe out there, and we will see you again with another episode in about a week. Take care.
Au revoir.
Later.
Au revoir.
Drive those cars safely.
Thank you for listening. This has been The Thing About Cars. We'll see you on the road.